All of us worship something. You and I need to reserve our highest affections for the only one who creates, that's God himself.
In Rome, we love football. We love every kind of football.
Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Are you ready for
I'm
this?
Ready. I'm ready.
They were worshipers.
Yeah.
Worshipers of football.
Looking back, I worshipped status. Ha! I wanted to be the next Springsteen.
What did that get you? If you worship body beautiful, it will eat you alive. You find something that'll die for you, you find something that brings hope in life, that is worth worshiping.
I'm Brian Tome, and this is my friend and co-worker, Austin Livingood. We've come halfway around the world to explore and learn from the empire of ancient Rome, the empires around us today, and decide where we will place our trust. Will we place our trust in an ancient empire that is obviously gone? Will we place our trust in a modern empire known as the United States of America? Or will we place our trust in an eternal empire known as the Kingdom of God? This is Empires.
Hebrews 11:1. Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen.
We're here in Rome with our Roman guide and archaeologist, Francesca, who's the original taste tester for the Frappuccino.
Oh, the Frappuccino.
Yeah. Yeah. A woman of many skills. Where are we right now, Francesca?
We are in front of the Pantheon. The Pantheon, it was a pagan temple, a Roman temple, erected first time in the first centuries before Christ, and then redone by Adrian in the second centuries.
My gosh, this is just... I mean, these columns here,
yeah.
Are they solid?
Our granite columns, they came from Egypt and are monolithic columns, one block of marble.
One block?
Yes.
You said the emperor who did this was Hadrian?
Adrian, yes.
Adrian.
The emperor Adrian.
All right, let's see if he might still be home. Yo, Adrian! You in there, Adrian?
Are you here?
Yo, Adrian! All right, okay. Come on.
I help you.
You doing some river dancing there? Is that what that was?
We're gonna shut this door so that like no one comes in on us. So I don't want the Avon lady coming in and just. My goodness. Now Francesca, what was this place used as?
It was, first of all, a temple. A pagan temple where the sacrifice or as a worship. So the people came here and was dedicated to the pagan gods. But till the beginning of the 7th centuries, when the pagan temple of the Pantheon was converted in a church.
Wow, so it's been a church?
Yeah, and then a kind of mausoleum where the important people were buried.
Francesca, this, this might be a dome question. I mean, dumb question.
That might be the first funny thing you said this entire time. The first one, yeah.
It's a good spot for dumb questions.
You know, what's the significance? I feel like this is right underneath.
Yeah, because here the dome, the dome of the Pantheon, is not an ordinary dome. It was the first dome, the largest dome, but especially a dome with a hole. The hole is called the eye, and it's not protected by a glass. And so when rains in the Pantheon too.
How big is this?
It's 142 feet.
Jesus.
It's a perfect sphere. We are now exactly in the center of the floor of the Pantheon. Yeah.
So if you took a 142-foot ball, it would drop in here perfectly.
Perfectly, jeez. Yes, exactly.
Amazing
perfectly here.
Architecture. Yeah. Today we're looking at what it means to have faith, what it means to actually worship. I'm in a place of worship in ancient Rome. This is the Pantheon. Pantheon. Pan means all. Theon, gods. All the gods. In Roman culture, they would have memorials to all the different gods in this place, which they were to worship and give their affections to. And in Roman culture, it wasn't so much that they had this great belief in these gods, that they had this sort of heartfelt love for these gods. It was a contractual arrangement. It was the belief that if I do this, then the gods should do this. If I don't do that, then the gods shouldn't do that. It was completely contractual, quid pro quo. Every culture, every empire has a religion. Some of them are monotheism. There is one God. Monotheism, there is one God. Some of them are pantheism. There are many gods. Some of them are polytheism. Everything is God. But every empire that I've ever seen has some core spiritual belief, something that causes you to do what you do and to give glory to some entity outside of yourself so that you can have the life that you want. Because if I do this, the gods have to do that. America is really no exception to this. We used to be a monotheistic culture, believing in the Judeo-Christian idea of who God was. There's increasingly fewer people who line up with the Judeo-Christian monotheistic idea, but nonetheless, in America, we still operate by this contractual understanding with God, whether it's contracting with the God of the Bible or contracting with any other God. And our belief is, if I do this, then God should do that for me. Some of us worship our bodies. We worship our physical health. And if you want to find somebody who's really upset, find somebody who has cancer. All of us should be upset when we have cancer. But if you find somebody who's had this contractual arrangement with the God of their health, and they haven't smoked, they haven't done coffee, they work out four times a day or four times a week, they wear the right stuff, they eat organic, and then that person comes down with cancer, the worldview is detonated because I held up my view, I held up my end of the bargain, so is thought. So why is this stuff happening to me? And bitterness comes in. Most atheists in America that I interact with are atheists because they're bitter that the contract wasn't fulfilled by what they thought God should do. Most atheists I interact with are very angry. They're angry at the lot of life. They're angry with something that's taken place in their life because they didn't deserve it. Because I did this, and so therefore the God or gods should do this for me. But let's make no mistake about it. Every single person worships. If you're an atheist, you worship. And I'll allow atheists to speak for themselves instead of me speak for atheists. I'll just like to quote David Foster Wallace, a well-known atheist who ended his life later with suicide. Before he did that, here's what he said. In the day-to-day trenches of adult life, there is no such thing as atheism. And an outstanding reason for choosing some sort of God or spiritual type thing to worship, be it Jesus Christ or Allah, be it Yahweh or the Wiccan Mother Goddess or the Four Noble Truths or some infrangible set of ethical principles, is that pretty much anything else you worship will eat you alive. He's saying that if you worship body beautiful, it will eat you alive. It is bondage to keep yourself in tip-top physical health and expecting that God to always take care of you. If you worship at the altar of the stock market, it will eat you alive because every blip or every correction will utterly crush your identity. If you worship at the picture of family beautiful, the first time your child gets busted with weed, it will crush you because you thought you did everything and now this is happening. All of these false gods will let us down. In fact, any God, even the true God will let you down if you think he's bound to do certain things because of your contractual obligation to him. One of the gods that we have in America is America. When I was telling people about this series that we were doing and setting up the premise that Rome as an ancient empire went away, and if we were into any earthly empire, it will go away. And as I explained that America is an earthly empire, it will go away. It's just a matter of time. My goodness, the blowback. Whew. The blowback I got that was pretty profound. people thinking I was insulting our country, people thinking I wasn't valuing the work of our veterans. I'm so thankful for our veterans. I'm so thankful for our country. I'm very thankful to live in our country. I wouldn't want to live any place else than in America. And I don't worship America. America will not satisfy my soul. America will not be transcendent. America will not be eternal. And if you're uncomfortable about any of this sort of talk, guess what? Your God is America. That's your God is. This is called out. You're worshiping America. And that's why elections are so massive for those of us who worship America. Because my preferred God, the leader of my kingdom, isn't the one I wanted, whether it was somebody on the right or whether it's somebody on the left. And every national crisis actually becomes a faith crisis. Because the thing I'm standing on, the thing I'm worshiping, the thing that I'm giving my affections is letting me down. All of these gods, every last one that was in here, they're all gone. In fact, we can't even see their statues anymore. We've forgotten who these gods are in here. And someday, we will forget who the United States is. There's one God that has never been forgotten and will never be forgotten. He is the King of an eternal empire. His name is Jesus. And when we give Him our affections, it's not a contract where He promises to do certain things for us in a quid pro quo way. It's a covenant. He actually enters into a beautiful relationship with us that taps into the best things in our heart. Doesn't guarantee the best things will always happen in our life, but taps into the best things in our heart. He's someone who's worthy of our affections. I'm in one of the older sections of Rome, a place that has amazing history. When you think about Rome, you gotta think about Caesar, kind of one and the same things. And right here in this area is where a critical thing in the nation of Rome, the Empire of Rome, in the life of Caesar took place. You could see these ruins, these are old basilicas, right tucked under this road someplace is where those famous lines were uttered that we learned in fifth grade. Et tu, Brute? Et tu, Brute? When Caesar said to his friend, and you too, Brutus? This is where Caesar was killed, right here. Now, when he died, for years afterward, people who worshiped him and adored him would come here to pay him homage and would worship him. This was a place of worship. In this area, not only was Brutus doing his work on Caesar, but this is the place where kitty cats come. Here, kitty, 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 kitty. Cats have come here, all kinds of like gnarly, ugly cats. I just saw one before that was limping around on three legs. And it's kind of sad. And there's people who have feline fixations, almost feline fetishes, that will come here and feed the kitty cats because they're fixated on cats. I have a cat, Frank is his name. I'm not fixated on him, but I appreciate him. But I am fixated on motorcycles, camping gear. Oh my gosh, I love camping. Woodwork is another thing for me that I fixate on. Moved into a new house and I've been making furniture out of old reclaimed wood. And so I'm thinking, all right, what am I gonna do here? I'm gonna have a 12 inch planer. Yeah, am I doing a 3-blade or a 2-blade? I'll take the 3-blade, thank you very much. I'll think about woodworking stuff. I even think about growing the church that I'm a part of. I fixate on how do I reach people? How do we grow people? All of these things can be really great things to get our mind off our normal day-to-day life, but if we're not careful, the things that we fixate on can also be things that we worship. Having a fixation as defined as an intense avocation that gets our mind off the grind of life and is a bit fun, that's one thing. But when it comes to the place where it's all we think about, where all our money revolves around it, where all of our joy is popped up in this thing, it becomes worship. It becomes the thing that has captured our affections and defines our life and defines the amount of joy we have. And all of us have something that's like this. In the book of Romans, chapters 1 and 2, it says this: "For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. Claiming to be wise, they become fools and exchange the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. Therefore, God gave them up in the lusts of their hearts to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen." Caesar was a creature, and people worshiped him as if he were the Creator. These cats are creatures, and yet some people worship them as if they are the Creator. You and I need to reserve our highest affections and our greatest passions for the only one who creates. That's God Himself, who's created Caesar, who's created cats, who's created artisans who could create things like this, and has created you and I. That is an entity that's worth not just fixating on, he's worth worshiping. The problem with worshiping anything other than the Creator God is all those things will let us down. Caesar died. All these cats died. You could worship the United States of America. Guess what? The United States was created, doesn't create, and someday the United States will go away. And yet if you worship a specific political party and your heart revolves around that, or a specific ideology around what America is, you will be disappointed. Everything other than the Creator of God will ultimately let you down. It's just a matter of time. This is why Paul said in the book of Romans, chapter 5, "For while we were still weak, at the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. For one will scarcely die for a righteous person, though perhaps for a good person one would dare even to die. But God shows His love for us, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us." Caesar never died for anybody. He had people killed. He died, but he never willingly laid down his life for anybody. My motorcycle will rust, but it will never die on behalf of love for me. It will die, but not on behalf of love for me. My table that I built, it will have termites, I will have splinters. My identity might be changed if I worship any of those things, but to be really clear, none of those things will love me. None of those things will lay their life down for me. None of those things have the ability to alter and to change world history. 2,000 years later, Caesar is just a footnote. He's a plaque on a wall in Rome. He doesn't affect the trajectory of the world at all today, but the one who's worthy of being worshiped has, the one who's laid down his life, Jesus. Now, many people have laid down their lives. They're called martyrs. But we don't remember them 2,000 years later. We don't worship them, but we do worship that thing which changes our identity, and that's what Jesus does. One martyr in America, great martyr, his name is Martin Luther King. I have a friend who's an older African-American pastor, and he said, "Brian, Martin died for my rights, but Jesus died for my wrongs." That is who God is. He lays down His life when He doesn't have to, because you and I have gotten the remnants of the things that we've worshiped all over us, and this has affected our identity. It's who we are, and He still lays down His life for you and I. You find something that'll die for you, you find something that's been worshiped for 2,000 years, you find something that brings hope in life, that thing you better give your affections to.
Every country has its own national pastime or national obsession. In Italy, it is sports, or specifically football. Actually, the proper word is soccer.
Let's make it happen.
Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Are you ready for
this? I'm ready.
So we decided to join force with Paco and May, who work with our student ministry team, to show some Italians how we roll.
I'm Brian. Good to meet you.
Austin.
Almost. Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Hold on. I just record. This is like, look at these faces. It's very, very sad. Long lost brother.
Come on,
Now we go to the field and we play 5 versus 5, okay? I play with you.
You're coordinated.
Oh, I'm good, okay.
Cercate di non entrare, guys. Cercate di non entrare.
Oh!
In Rome, we love football. We love every kind of football.
Go! Go!
Go!
Okay.
Feel free to.
There it is!
We just scored a goal, and no one on our team can breathe.
The good thing of football is a team sport. So everybody can play. So you can play at 50 years, you have 60 years, 70 years. It's a sport. It's a sport for all the people.
Yeah, eat a lot of Ritz crackers. I can't talk right now.
I got a feeling it's about to get ugly down here.
Uh-oh. Would you say that football is the most important thing to Italians?
Yes, of course. Like, with the food, maybe is the best. It's the most important thing.
Food, football, food, football, one of those things. Let's keep it going.
What about faith or God? Is there any love for God in this country?
It's important for all the religions because in Italy we have Christian, Jewish, Muslim. So, but maybe food is the best, the most important thing.
And God's down there.
Yes, but it's a different kind of importance in our life. We live for football.
No mas. No mas. Oh, that's fancy. No, come on. Whatever. No more. No. No more. Great job. Amazing.
Thank you.
Well done. That was great.
Italy 3, States 2.
Well, after that butt kicking, Austin and I went back to the hotel room to nurse our wounds and do a little debriefing.
Cool. Another good day. You look like you're limping there.
Well, this is what happens when you get your ass handed to you.
What are you talking about? We put up a great fight.
We did put up a great fight. And I'm hurting. That was the first goal I've had since my mom gave me orange slices and Capri Suns after our games.
Yeah, well, those dudes were into it.
Dude, yeah. They came in, they were just like, bag down, business time.
Did you hear what the one guy said when I was interviewing him? He said it's food, football, and then God.
Wow.
I even had to push him on the God. He wouldn't even include that. It's just like he said, in Italy, it's food and football. They were worshipers.
Yeah.
Worshipers of football.
Yeah.
I was talking earlier about some of my temptations to worship things that shouldn't be worshipped. Do you have any temptations in your area for that?
Oh yeah. I played music for a long time, started around 15 years old, traveling. We signed to a label and we were featured on all kinds of different magazines, J14, Alternative Press. You know, music video was played in malls across the US. Looking back, I can definitely say like, man, I worshiped status. It was not unusual for people to ask firsthand, like, not how are you doing, like, how's the band? That quickly became not just the thing I worshiped, I think it became my identity.
Yeah, it became everything wrapped up.
No,
So when did that thing go away then?
We were together maybe 2 years. And I would even say like after that, I feel like I was still chasing it. Part of me still longs for it. And that's a thing I'm constantly living in tension with and having to battle.
What do you think, it's a bad thing that you're still chasing after it?
I think it's a bad thing to chase after status. I couldn't make a living. None of us could make a living on what we were doing. The worst job I ever had came before I gave everything to God. Specifically, there was this job that I was working. I would go in and get yelled at every day. One day, I actually got so frustrated that I went out to my truck, skipped lunch break, And I yelled at God for all 30 minutes of whatever I had, probably 29 minutes because I had to walk back for the last minute. But I remember the last thing I said was like, God, I'm choosing you now. I know I haven't. I need you now, because if you're not involved in whatever's going on in my life, I don't know what's gonna happen. And true story, that night I got a text from a worship leader at our church, and he texted me and said, hey, do you wanna come lead worship with me at Crossroads Clifton this weekend? And I said, sure. I just said, God, if this is what you want, great. If it's a door that's opening, I'll walk through it. I just want you involved. And now I'm here. Now I'm a part of Crossroads.
Now you're in Rome.
Now I'm in Rome with you.
Who'd have ever thought, right?
Crazy.
You're from that level, yeah. And you're in Rome, singing in Rome,
yeah.
and helping people worship from all across the country,
yeah.
with your song. That's,
yeah,
pretty crazy. So when you look back, would you say you were blaming God?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I was blaming God. I wanted to be the next Springsteen growing up. But I knew what to pray in that moment, because my heart was longing for something more than my status.
You know, one of the greatest books of worship in the Bible is Book of Psalms.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a kind of psalm in there, it's called imprecatory psalm. It's just venting to God.
Yeah.
Just,
yeah,
venting. And a lot of that stuff is not very, it's not very godly sounding.
Right.
And there's a form of worship that even comes out in awful things that we say to God, because it presupposes there's a relationship. So
yeah,
maybe that was part of your highest part of worship, when that you were railing on God in 29 minutes. When you accused him of those things or were mad at him, did you ever say, I'm sorry?
Probably said sorry later that night after I got that text. You know, I'm pretty sure I did.
Right. Now that's okay, God.
No, it's
I apologize.
It's
okay,
good.
It's good. So keep doing what I want you to do, and then I'll apologize and not be mad.
That's good. That's good. But I think in the moment that I was yelling, I recognized that God, I've been reducing God to what I think he's capable of my whole life.
That's deep. Hmm. Wow. I like that. So our natural selves, we reduce God of what he's capable of. And when we worship, we increase in our minds what he's capable of. We increase
you're
in our hearts.
Right.
That's,
yeah.
Man, young buck, give me something to chew on. That's really good, man. That's some really strong seasoned perspective for you to have on worshiping and honoring God at 27. You have a great trajectory ahead of you to be able to have those concepts down. Really, brother, you're going a great way.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you.
Thanks, buddy.
Mm-hmm. You are the God who wrestles with the hearts of men. Won't you wrestle with this heart again? Won't you wrestle with my heart? You are God. Led us to the promised land. Led us through the sea on land. Won't you lead us there again? I'm here at what's known as the Temple of the Vestal Virgins. It's a place where women dedicated themselves to maintain sexual purity for 30 years. The idea was this. They would take women, young women, out of households of the nobles, and they would voluntarily give themselves for 30 years to their gods, and they would keep the fire burning. It was known as the soul of Rome. This is why you see around this place various statues of what some of these women were. And the idea was, so long as we have you people living pure lives of worship, the rest of us can do whatever the heck we want to do. So you keep yourself sexually pure, and we'll keep doing whatever we want to anybody or anything that we really feel like. As long as somebody is maintaining an attitude of worship, then the rest of us are covered. This is really a bad, bad deal. The idea that you can somehow sell off your worship, have somebody else do it for you. It just doesn't work. As we've been talking, all of us worship something. All of us fixate on something and are about something. That's why some of us, we come to the end of our lives and we're old and we get very bitter, because the thing that we've given our life to, the thing that we've worshiped, it hasn't been paying back. It hasn't provided us joy and eternal satisfaction at all. It's why there's a lot of bitter older people, I believe. It's also why there's these things called midlife crises. What happens? We get the middle of our life and the thing that we've been worshiping, bending our life around, whether it's the corporation or family or whatever it is, we find out it isn't doing it for us. Corporation has downsized us, or our position and our money isn't buying us the happiness we need. We may love our kids and may have a good family, but guess what? They move out. And so that thing we've been worshiping comes crashing down. We don't know what to do with our life. And then when we're young, this is why we try so many different things. There's so much experimentation. We're trying to find something that works for us, something that gives us an inner fire, something that gives us an inner peace, something that helps us feel a connection with the transcendent and gets us out of the grind. All of us worship something, and all of us are created by God to actually worship. The thing is, no one else can do it for us. Nobody. If I'm your pastor, I'm sorry, I can't worship for you. Your Catholic priest, he can't worship for you. If you like Hillsong Worship, which is an amazing group of worshipers, they can't worship for you. Bethel, they can't worship for you. They may be able to help you in your worship, but ultimately, your worship is a choice that you make, and you alone. You alone decide whether or not you'll give your life to God. You alone decide whether or not how you go about your day-to-day life, whether it's your sexual choices, your financial choices, your educational choices, your relational choices, whether or not you do those in such a way is to reflect glory back to God and to keep the fire of your own soul burning. In the book of Romans, written to people in this culture, chapter 12, verse 1, it says this: I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. We present our bodies as worship when we go into work, saying, God, whatever happens here at work, I want to do it to honor you and glorify you. I want to have a connection with you. We present our bodies to worship when we make family plans that aren't about our Hallmark fantasies, but we make family plans to communicate to God that I want my family structure to reflect your goodness and who you are. We present ourselves as objects of worship when we manage our resources in such a way as to honor God. This is your spiritual act of worship, not hoping for somebody else to be spiritual, not hoping things that work out the way they should, but giving your life to the one true emperor. The emperor of an eternal kingdom, his name is Jesus. It's a kingdom that does not fade, and it's a worshiper that is worthy of having a relationship with him. Let me pray for you right now. God, I pray that as we go about our day tomorrow and for the rest of our weeks and the rest of our lives, you would see that you matter to us. We want to lay our lives down on the altar of your will and your ways. We honor you from this day forward. Thank you for being an amazing King, worthy of our worship. And I pray these things according to the name and identity of Jesus. Amen.